from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made, not to get mushy, but by you, the listener. Every day, you make a choice. You decide what kind of media content interests you. You decide whether to skim it or dive in. Maybe you're listening to the show in a car. Maybe you're at work. Maybe you're jogging, listening on our mobile app. You don't have to be a millennial to care about this question. How can public radio build younger audiences? In fact, our older listeners routinely tell us they do try to convince younger friends and relatives to turn to NPR for news content, other programming, to turn to WXXI. And of course, it's a challenge. There's more competition than ever, more technology, more consumption options. You have to start with great content, we think, but you also have to find a way to reach listeners who don't really know you're there to begin with. And here's what got me thinking about this subject. Next week, WXXI is hosting a Generation Listen event at Lostboro Brewing. We're excited about that. I'm going to be there. And I was looking at the list of people who have so far committed to attend. It's pretty young, relatively speaking. And I thought it might be interesting to discuss all the ways, big and small, that we're trying to bring in younger listeners and make them listeners for life. Turns out there's a lot of ongoing research on this subject. It uses the word millennial a lot. I know that annoys people, in particular millennials. But, I know it's sort of a categorical descriptor. We'll get on that. And let me go ahead and introduce my guests, because I will try to get out of the way as best I can this hour. So I've got a couple of colleagues in studio. Daniel Abramson-Swartz is the director of our station events and special projects for WXXI, an avid listener, a millennial.
Yes.
I hate to do that, but it's sort of, I know.
It doesn't bother me as much as other people. It's only when people use millennials. And
like monolithically, like all millennials do this or all millennials. Yeah. But anyway, Daniel is helping put together this wonderful event next week.
Yeah.
And we'll also talk about why and how we're trying to reach people. So Daniel's here. My colleague, Veronica Volk, who is a, Veronica is Great Lakes reporter for WXXI News.
Yes, I am.
Is that the official title now?
It is.
I have to get used to this.
It's on the website.
Yes. Our colleague from the newsroom, you know her from her wonderful daily reporting and podcasting. And Veronica is somebody who I turn to when I want to understand where media is going.
Oh, thanks, Evan.
Actually true,
I want to come out strongly against the label millennial while we're on it.
Yes, we've got a disagreement already. Yes, excellent. Thank you, Veronica. She's here. Tiana Mignon's here, the editor-in-chief of Open Mic Rochester. How do you feel about the label millennial, Tiana?
I actually don't hate it. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm the only person. I don't mind it. I very much fit it, though, so that might be why.
All right. Well, nice to see you back here.
Thank you.
Nice having you here. And Zach Graham is here, the co-owner of Maker's Gallery and Studio, the Rochester Donut King, which is like a thing, and he's going to be there next week at this event.
It's a big thing. It's a big thing.
How do you feel about the label millennial?
I don't hate it at all. As a matter of fact, I don't hate labels in general. Like, I don't know. I think stereotypes do offer something to kind of grip, especially when you're marketing, when you're branding and marketing and trying to drive business to a certain place. Having, you know, an aggregate that you can kind of reach out to and say, assign certain characteristics to, I think it helps in the business world.
Well, and I will also say that I had a chance to talk to some of the people who work in management at this company, Gene Fisher, Lisa Orlando. We talked about the kind of research and the work that our company is doing to understand listening trends and habits and what people want. And they said, you got to talk to the Jacobs family. You got to talk to Fred Jacobs, and we've got him on the phone. He's the president of Jacobs Media, and he's designer of a public radio tech survey. They've been looking a lot at millennial habits, and he's on the line with us now. Fred, welcome to the program. Thanks for taking the time.
Evan, thank you for having me, and I have to say, I'm an aging baby boomer.
Love it.
And, you know, it is what it is. So you kind of go with what you are. But, you know, to the conversation that you started with the whole generational stereotyping thing, I can tell you, back in the late 60s and early 70s, some of the things they were saying about boomers are every bit as unfair and narrow-minded as what they say about millennials today. I think the whole danger of generation typing is something that ultimately gets marketers in trouble because it really is impossible to think about millennials in a monolithic kind of way. So I know that's not exactly where your conversation is going, but I do think even as a research guy looking at generational breakdowns, as we'll talk about, there is a danger in putting everybody in various silos and generalizing from there.
Yeah, and so when we talk millennials, we will try to generalize without overgeneralizing, or at least making some distinctions without assuming that all millennials behave the same way. But at the same time, Fred, I wonder then, when you and your firm have to do research on this subject, and you've got clients who say, tell me what millennials want, and you come back to them and you give them this nuanced answer, like, well, you know, not all millennials are the same. That may not always sit well with a client who wants an answer on how to reach a target audience like that.
Right, and there clearly are big directional differences by generation, and specific to the studies that we've been doing for the past 8 years, there is no question that as you begin to watch what's happening in the media and tech world, and you follow that by generation, I mean, you definitely see there is a bit of a schism in the public radio audience between the traditional listeners who have been around for decades and younger listeners, or at least prospective younger listeners, who you certainly need to attract in order to keep the brand and the radio station vital. So it is a dance. The good news is that there are a lot of common values that are shared, whether you're 22 or 72, about what is important to you in public radio. And I think the key is for many public radio outlets is to begin to start thinking about the audience in different segments and trying to find ways to customize or tailor some of your activities to be able to appeal to various groups. So it obviously gets a little bit more expensive, and perhaps from a human resource standpoint as well. But clearly, the younger audience is looking for some different things out of the radio station and out of their media experience than are the traditional listeners. And so you have to understand both and look for areas of common thinking and also look for areas of divergence, because there's a lot of that too.
All right, listeners, I'm going to make a direct appeal. If you're under the age of 35, I'd love to hear from you this hour. 844-295-TALK. Toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can find me on Twitter at Evan Dawson. You can email me, edawson@wxxi.org. But I'd love to know sort of what your consumption habits are, how you found this show, how you found WXXI, what kind of device or the method you do to listen. And I'm going to kind of go around the table. I'll start with Tiana Magnon. You know, I mean, we had you on the program on a different day, but for you, What's a typical media consumption day like?
Honestly, it all starts and pretty much ends with my phone. It's Facebook, it's Instagram, and it's very, I think, it's more intuitive than before. It's more streamlined. So the news is already where I am. So it's showing up in my social feeds. And now on Instagram, it's showing up right alongside, my favorite local artist. And I'm not as bad as it sounds to a lot of newsroom people. We're not really seeking it out anymore, especially because news always comes to us. And that's what I'm very much used to. It's already there.
Okay. Zach.
Yeah, I think people definitely want like a curated experience. I mean, nobody wants to be bombarded with information. So I get everything from Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I would say that by and large, like, that's where the millennial generation, even though you can't see my air quotes right now, the millennial generation, that's where their attention is. It's on their phone. They're not seeking things out. Things are kind of mm-hmm. brought to them, but they have an opportunity to curate that experience. So that's kind of how I look at things.
It's harder to turn to my colleagues because we're sort of inside the baseball. We're kind of too inside it, but Veronica, I'll start with you on that. What do you make of what you're hearing from our guests here about their consumption? Probably not surprising at all.
No, I mean, not surprising at all, and I'm much the same way. I use Twitter as an aggregate to basically find all of my news content, whether it's local, national, international. But that creates a problem for public radio because you're disrupting the distribution, which disrupts the economic model that it's built on. So it's terrifying.
Danielle.
Well, I'm somebody who I actually do seek out content. I start my day with the WXXI app. I cannot live without morning edition.
She had nice
don't
plug.
Plug or everyone's
like, you got swag. I know.
No, but for real.
It's a Trojan horse to promote the brand. No, go ahead.
No, but that's how, I mean, obviously I live and breathe, but WXXI, but even before I worked here, it was something that I sought out because of what I wanted to hear. But I think what we're talking about is important in the responsibility of public media, obviously. So we're all used to having this stuff brought to us. So as a public radio station, we have some responsibility then to go and meet our listeners where they're at. And I think that's the challenge that we're going to be facing in the next couple of years as we see this medium develop. And we have the content, but as I see your great diagram right there, there's also the distribution, Veronica. And I think we need to figure out, we have the content, so where's the distribution and how can we change how we do that?
Yeah. In a second, I want to kind of blow up one of the myths or stereotypes about millennials. And I'll have Fred help us do that in a second. But let me grab a phone call. Nicole wants to weigh in on her consumption habits. Hi, Nicole.
Hi.
You are, I guess you're a millennial, yeah?
Yes, I'm a millennial.
How do you feel about that term, by the way? Sorry about that.
I embrace it.
Okay.
Not to say that I am a
Veronica's in so much
millennial.
Pain here, yeah.
can we get a definition on millennial?
It's 18 to 34.
That's
18, it's just 19 to 35.
19 to 35?
Yeah.
Okay, 19 to 35. Go ahead, Nicole.
I embrace the term because I realize that there is, you know, the greatest diversity among this millennial generation than many others would say. So I consider myself, you know, a product of how I was raised and of the generation I'm a part of, but I appreciate the diversity of the generation as well.
And how did you, for example, find this talk show?
I have actually been an avid listener of public radio and NPR for probably 2 or 3 years. I would say just a little bit after graduating college when I became politically interested. And I occasionally turn on Connections, and today was a good one to turn on.
Are you, do you listen, you know, what kind of device? How are you consuming it?
I actually listen to radio a lot. I am part of the cord cutters, and I don't have cable at home.
Yep.
So we listen to a lot of radio and Netflix. That's about it in terms of, you know, consumption of digital media, really.
Yeah, it's a cord-cutting generation for sure. And so before I let you go, Nicole, when it comes to your friends, for example, it's not going to hurt my feelings if you say many of your friends aren't Connections listeners, though that would be great if they were. But what would start to change that? You know, was it, you mentioned your kind of your life circumstances a few years after graduating college, becoming a little more politically active, maybe more community-minded. But what do you think it's going to turn people, what would get people your age to listen to public radio more?
That's a tough question. I know that I have sort of two varying groups of friends, some of whom are very interested in politics and you know, current pop culture happenings, and others who don't care at all and might not even be able to tell you some of the people that represent us locally. And, you know, I have those two separate groups of friends for very different reasons. I think that the more educated group in general of millennials is probably more active or more apt to listen to public radio. I don't know. Radio is a tricky media source, I believe, just because some people would think that it's going away. But, you know, I've listened to it more since I've been an adult than when I was younger and in totally different fashion. So I don't know that I have a further answer than that, unfortunately.
No, I think there's a lot of good insight there. Thank you. Thanks for listening, by the way, Nicole.
Sure. You're welcome.
Nice to hear you, and thanks for calling the program. I appreciate that. Zach, you want to jump in there?
I just want to kind of ask you guys a question just because I'm an outsider from the public radio kind of standpoint. Would you say that, by and large, like the people that listen to you, it's more of like an ideological thing. Like they want to support local. They want to support public radio. It's kind of like a, it's almost like a moral thing that they want to support these things. Not necessarily that they're going to that because the content is just mind-blowing and they just can't get enough of it. Like, would you say that it's like people that are like really just kind of like value public radio in and of itself?
I think you heard that from Nicole a little bit.
Yeah.
You get to a certain age and, you know, we had a conversation with one of our interns earlier this year who said, you know, she hit an age in college where she just felt more connected to her community or felt like it was more important to be a part of the community in significant ways. And all of a sudden, WXXI and public radio sort of organically came onto her radar that way. So I think that is one way it happens.
Okay.
But I think there's a risk for us, and Fred can probably weigh on this, and a lot of people, I don't want it to be a, you know, just one ideological bent. I don't want it to be wealthy and white. I don't want, you know, I want it to avoid being monolithic in those ways, and that's important to me. I mean, you know, Tiana Mignon, how do you feel about, are we covering issues that matter to you in Rochester, your community, your background? You know, how do you feel about that?
I think we should focus a lot more on the actual medium that you guys are delivering, because I find myself reading you guys online, but I don't really click on the link to listen to the podcast. I don't really have, I mean, it's not that I don't have the 20 or 30 minutes to listen to it. Just for me, it's always seemed easier to read the content. And I've noticed that it's kind of the same thing for a lot of my other friends. Instead of, you know, watching the video, instead of listening to it, they'll just read the content that kind of summarizes it, that kind of, you know, says what's going on, and then they move on from there. So it's not ideal, but I will admit that.
You're starting to push us into the skim and dive thing, and we're going to do that.
Yeah.
We're going to do that in just a second, because I do find that sort of interesting. Danielle and Veronica on this? Go ahead, Danielle.
Well, I feel kind of what Zach was hitting on was this thing that I'm very interested in when it comes to how people relate to public media, public radio in particular, and that's the sense of identity and how you take participating in public media as part of your identity. A lot of people do. Like, people
yes,
don't.
Exactly. Yeah, like that's you exactly say, what like, I'm talking about.
I'm a public radio listener. I'm a PBS nerd. Mm-hmm. I'm an NPR nerd.
Right.
They have t-shirts
exactly.
and buttons
and
that they sell.
We want that.
So, but what does that mean, though, like when people interact that way with media? Because I don't walk around saying, like, I'm a WHAM watcher or other things like that. It seems to be sort of particular to what we're doing here in public media that people take it in as part of who they are. And I think that's a really interesting thing that I continue trying to explore as I work here.
Veronica.
I totally agree with everything that's being said. I also think that there's an important distinction between the types of content that is made by public radio. I mean, you have news in your daily magazine news shows, but you see programs like Radio Lab being made by WNYC. You see Invisibilia with NPR. And I think that these kind of narrative-driven programs are appealing to a different kind of listener, and maybe someone who's not interested in all these on all this political information, like we heard from Nicole, but maybe somebody who's interested in the narrative storytelling and this kind of like different, you know, this different kind of content that I think we're doing a really good job with.
Public radio,
the industry.
And I think, Fred Jacobs, I think what Veronica said just answered Zach's point in that there are those public radio people. You know, I'm interested in the community. I land on WXXI when I'm more engaged. But then to Veronica's point, maybe someone had barely heard of WXXI, but they found Finding Tammy Joe, or you find a podcast, or you listen to something that you go, wow, that blew me away. And then you come in a different way. So I guess there's different doors to bring younger audiences in. It's not just those, though. I think Zach did make a good point that there is probably a values core to some of the listeners.
And it seems to be more
some of that. But you know, this whole idea that it's a moral imperative to listen, I think, is very tertiary to other motivations. I mean, the one thing that we see in our research among millennials that's fascinating is that more so than any other generation, their number one reason for listening to public radio is to learn new things.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, really speaks to some of the things that your guests are talking about. It's not so much necessarily the election, but it could be about anything. And I think that's why programs like This American Life or even Marketplace, I mean, which is clearly a way to learn about the business world, perhaps in a non-traditional way. But that idea of learning new things. And then also another value that I think is fascinating that jumps right off the spreadsheet at us is public radio gives me conversations to have with other people. It gives me things to talk about, which I think is something that you don't get from other media. So there are clearly some values to public radio that set it apart. And yes, not everybody walks through the same door in order to get to your radio station, but there are some common pathways that people do take and appreciate. It's just that not everybody shares those values, of course.
The great news is our phones have really gone off here, which
yes.
is, you know, which. So I'm just going to kind of, as we go throughout this discussion, just bring in listeners as much as we can here, because I want to hear from them. Jake and Williamson, next up. Go ahead, Jake.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk how incredibly important it is. You know, I have a Facebook account, and everything on my Facebook account tends to lean the political direction that I tend to look at. One reason I listen to so much NPR is because I feel like it's fairly neutral, but my point is, I think it's incredibly, increasingly important with the amount of social media leading, you know, with depending on who you follow, that, you know, NPR stays, you guys stay as neutral as possible. That's one of the reasons I listen, is because I like to get presented with facts and develop my own opinions, versus being yelled at and told what the, you know, kind of the right way to think is. And I see things getting more and more severe and leaning one direction or the other on social media, because that's who your network tends to be.
Yeah, this is an interesting point here. I've got an email from someone who wants more pointed left-wing commentary. I've got someone waiting on the phone to jump in on that. And I know people get fired up and they have very strong political views. So so I think Jake's comment is a validating kind of remark in some ways, but I also know some want something else. I mean, Tiana, do you want content that is sort of validating a world view for you? Or because I don't really believe in objectivity. I believe in being self-aware of one's own mm-hmm. biases. But how do you feel about
that? I think I can answer that from both perspectives. Kind of as a reader, I really, really treasure, you know, as objective, as self-aware reporting as possible. I like to know that my reporters have, you know, done as much as they can interviewing both sides and presenting that fairly. And, you know, as an editor of a black magazine, that was something we ran into. We don't want to be an advocacy magazine. We want to be able to criticize our own community when we write our stories. And so I think objectivity and, you know, neutrality, I think that has such an important part in today's media landscape. Everything, I mean, there's blogs, there's, everyone has commentary nowadays, that if you can find a source that's trustworthy and it's fair, you should stick on to it.
Can I jump in for a second?
Sure.
I think we're getting a little bit off topic, because what we're talking about is why listen to public radio. And if it were just based off of our reputation and tradition of being neutral and objective, then I think we wouldn't be asking ourselves why we need young people to listen to public radio.
That's fair.
Well,
you disagree, Danielle?
No, I fully agree. And actually, I was just thinking about going back to something that Fred said, that public radio gives you something to talk about. And I think that's kind of getting back towards how to engage young people. It's the idea that media provides more to you than just facts or information, even though that's really important, but it adds something to your sense of your community, of yourself, of the people around you. It helps you, it gives you a bridge to relate to other people. And I know that's what we're trying to do with our listening party, but I think that's where content like Radiolab and Invisibilia and This American Life for so many years has succeeded in providing people an auditory bridge to an experience that they've never had before. And I think that's what we can do as a public radio station, is engage people in that way, to provide them with a place to conversate and to talk and to make a connection in a way that they wouldn't have otherwise.
But if that's true, then we just have to...
One of you said earlier, and it was right on the money, you know, the old adage now, content is king and distribution is queen. I mean, distribution is absolutely critical to this conversation, because whether it's your guests who are calling in over the phone or people in the studio, I mean, I think the one thing that you're hearing is that people now listen to public radio in a lot of different ways, on a traditional broadcast radio or on their phones or in all kinds of different places, podcasts or even reading the actual copy. But the distribution part is kind of the gnarly part, because it is obviously costly to provide content in a lot of different outlets, but it's critical that you do that, especially respecting the media habits of millennials and even their younger brothers and sisters, who you don't even want to think about, but you have to, and that's Generation Z, who are coming up, and there's a pretty fair amount of them floating around as well. One of the other tough parts of the conversation here is measurement, because there's ratings being taken, right? Mm-hmm. And the rating company does a okay job of measuring terrestrial radio listening, not a particularly good job of measuring things like podcasting or streams or those kinds of things. And so that's another one of those really tough issues that all radio stations, public or commercial, are going through right now is that it costs money in order to make sure that your content is available on all these different portals. It's just that some are a lot easier to monetize and cash in on than others. Now, your financial model is different from, say, WHAM's, for example. You're looking more at membership donations, those kinds of things. And by the way, here's another little tidbit that we see in our research. Millennials are the most likely group to be sustaining members. We think that there's probably a connection there because these are the same people who don't mind at all subscribing to Netflix right. or Spotify, and the sustaining model very much mirrors that same type of relationship.
Yeah,
and
good.
Ultimately, for a station like yours, sustaining membership is absolutely critical to sustaining your brand.
All right. Let's reset this. Let's do it. Take the only break of the hour, and we're going to come back. If you are on the phone, we're going to get to you. I have all kinds of interesting comments. People like Steven, who says, I'm 33. I grew up believing in the fairness of PBS. That trust has been extended to WXXI. Thank you, Steven, for that. That's great to hear. Ashley says, my millennial husband and I both listen to NPR and WXXI News almost every day. I appreciate the balance of local and world info. Thank you, Ashley. Joe writes to us, I'm 23. I'm usually on Reddit and, of course, listening to WXXI. That's
a desperate little difference.
Yeah, that's interesting. So we're getting a flavor of some of the habits. And again, habits, there's not just a millennial habit that's out there. But after our only break of the hour, we're going to come back, tell you about the event that had me thinking about this all. There's an event next week. We're not going to spend the hour pushing the event, but I do want you to know about what's going on next week. And we'll take more of your phone calls. We're going to talk about skim and dive. One of the stereotypes that's really unfair to millennials is that there's no attention span, that there's no desire for depth of content. And the research is, and frankly, many other forms of podcasting have blown that out of the water. But we're going to talk about that as well. So let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back with my colleagues, Daniel Abramson-Swartz and Veronica Volk from WXXI, Zach Grams, the co-owner of Maker's Gallery, Tiana Mignon's the editor-in-chief of Open Mic Rochester, and on the phone with us is Fred Jacobs, who's the president of Jacobs Media and a designer of a public radio tech survey. Short break, more right straight ahead. I'm Evan Dawson, Wednesday on The Next Connections. As we get older, maybe we give up on learning new things, like learning how to speak French or play the piano or fix a car. But there are organizations locally that try to impart knowledge in various ways that have us thinking, using our brains, from Osher to the Brainery and beyond. We're talking about Adult Learning Wednesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and I'm really moved by the amount of feedback we're getting from, 35 and under listeners. This is really, really helpful because I think it's fair to say that callers to this program skew a little older. That's because younger listeners communicate with the show in different ways. We bring in Twitter and different things. But from the phones to the different forms of feedback, it's wonderful to hear from you. We are talking about building younger audiences in public radio, sustaining that. And what got me thinking about this was an event we're doing next week. So Daniel Abramson-Swartz is going to tell us just a little bit. An event that's almost booked out. I don't know if there's any room left, but what's going on
next
week?
I looked, we still had a little bit of room.
A couple of slots or something?
A couple of slots open. And, if you're really excited, we can get you in because we want people who want to participate in our conversation. But we're going to do something that's come out of NPR Generation Listen, which are these listening parties, where we're going to have ours on Wednesday, August 24th at Lost Borough Brewery, 5:30 to 7:30. And you can RSVP on WXXI's Facebook page. And it's basically going to be an opportunity for us to talk about the value of the listening experience, what's happening in this audio medium that can help engage people. And we're going to listen to some great content from some NPR podcasts like Invisibilia, Radio Lab, and Hidden Brain, which are some of my favorite podcasts. We're going to hear from you, Evan, and Veronica. You guys have been really great champions of audio content and podcasting here. And we're going to encourage people to talk with us, talk about what we're hearing. I guess we can kind of try to get into it in the second half. But there's something that happens in these long-form podcasts or these stories where it can be a very transformative experience. You can come in with one idea and leave with another or see the world in a different way. And I think that the podcasts I just mentioned really succeed in that. So we're going to encourage people to come participate in the dialogue. There'll be brews brews and snacks. You'll be able to color. We'll have coloring sheets. We're going to have a lot of great creativity and hopefully a lot of great conversation. And it'll be a way to experience public radio in a way you've never had before.
So one of the reasons that I'm super excited about this is because it points to something that I find so exciting about radio, which is you see video and images and text taking over the digital space, but you see radio moving into like the physical space, which is something the music industry has been doing for years and years and years. We've been having live shows forever. But now we're seeing panel discussions and listening parties and all of these like in-person events that build community. And it's like, it's just, it's like awesome for me. Because I feel like if you can make a generalization about millennials, it's going to be that we're interested in authenticity and all this experiential wealth, which is something that like radio has this great opportunity to provide right now.
Yes, experiential wealth. Yeah, I'm excited. Love that.
All right, so if you want to get involved next week, you still can do that where?
You can still go. So go to WXXI's Facebook page. It's under our events, and you have to click going to count as an RSVP. Interested doesn't count this time. You just got to click going, and there's a few more spots left. There's also some information in the description on how to get
hold
of us.
But we know that in Facebook events, going means maybe, and maybe means not. So if you say you're going, we want you to be going.
That's
Evan
right.
wants a handwritten letter.
If you signed and notarized.
Send a DM to Evan with your promissory note.
Okay. All right. So let me get back to your phone calls. And we're going to try to go quickly here because we have a lot of comments to work through. And I want to get back to talking to Fred Jacobs about some of the work they're doing now, research on millennial listener habits. But Skylar in Rochester. Go ahead, Skylar. Hi, Skylar. Are you there?
Skylar. Oh, it was Tyler. Sorry.
Tyler. Hi, Tyler. Sorry. Go ahead,
Hi.
Tyler.
Yeah. I just want to point out the irony of this. Why do you need to have this talk show if millennials are pretty clear about what they want? They want honesty, they want openness, and they want to be heard. And the fact that a lot of these movements are having to do such drastic things just for what you're calling the aging boomers who went through this in the 70s and the 60s, that these movements right now are having to do such drastic things just to get heard is a little weird to me.
All right, hold on. Stay there. Let's let our millennials in the studio jump on that there. What do you think there, Veronica Volk?
This is interesting to me because it's true. NPR was founded, right, in like college stations and all these like weird independent stations, and they were doing something totally weird. They were making all these crazy risks. And, you know, you see like the people who are in charge kind of like aging and maybe the audience aging with them. So I think that goes back to what we were talking about when it comes to like taking risks and maybe investing a little bit more money in meeting people where they want to be. I mean, like, I'm not really sure if I totally understood the comment, but hopefully that speaks to it a little bit.
Well, why don't you follow up a little bit, Tyler?
Sure. Well, for example, global change, climate change is a big issue with millennials right now. Or someone mentioned how diverse we are these days. We want to see equality, social equality. We want to see social or economic justice. We want to see ecology. We want to see climate justice. Like, that is well known. So I don't know how it's so difficult to see that. What millennials want to hear are the facts about climate change, what's being done to stop it, what's being done to stop the people who are trying to stop it, and why nothing's really getting done.
Yeah. I'll answer that from a host perspective, and then I'm going to kind of go back to our panel. Tyler, thanks for the phone call. I remember when Brian Williams had the whole scandal on, you know, was he on that plane in Iraq, and was he under fire? And of course, his career has been greatly damaged by that. But I remember when Bill Maher said that, he said, you know, Brian Williams isn't, he said, I don't think Brian Williams is not a journalist because he made up a story about being under fire in Iraq. I think Brian Williams is not a journalist because last year, and the NBC Nightly News, his show, did a total of 24 minutes on climate change in a year. And that comment stayed with me. I thought, what are the issues that really matter to people? And we have really tried, Tyler, on this program, and I think in our newsroom, and I think NPR as well, to address those things. But I take the point that Tyler's saying it shouldn't be that hard to understand what we care about. This is what we care about. Program to it, and we'll come to it. Tiana, you were sort of reacting with
that. Yeah, I think it goes back to what I was saying, and Veronica reacted to that, and she said it's obviously not enough. We know exactly what millennials want. We're millennials ourselves. We get the content ourselves, but it's not enough. There's so much noise out there, and then trying to fight through that to be heard is almost impossible. I mean, there's some really great media outlets who are doing phenomenal work, and then you have, you know, louder voices who just drown them out. So I think, yes, we know what millennials want, but we're going back to what we were saying. How do we reach them?
All right, Zach and Fred. Zach, go ahead.
Well, I just want to touch on what Veronica said prior to all that with going to where millennials are. If you can't go where they are digitally, via social media, or, you know, you want to have public radio be a mainstay, then go to where they are physically. I think that's an amazing thing, like you touched on. Music has, you know, kind of used that business model for a long time now. And I think people really connect with that because it's an authentic experience. You get to know these people. It becomes real. You know, go to where they are. That's how you... that's how you get to people on social media. That's how you get to people branding. That's how you get to people on radio. I think go to where they already are. You don't have to try to reinvent the wheel here.
Fred Jacobs is the president of Jacobs Media. Sounds easy, Fred. What do you think?
Yeah, it's real simple because Tyler has his priorities and people under the other four blinking lights there in the studio have their priorities. The really good news about this is that 10 years ago, you only had one channel at your radio station and that was it. Today you have multiple channels via streams and podcasts to be able to represent diverse viewpoints, diverse groups. You can do all those things. And I think podcasting, for example, is one of those areas where you really have infinite ways to be able to connect with lots of different people. You know, public radio has done a great job in the podcasting sphere, and you can see that when you look at the most downloaded podcasts in iTunes. But when you take a deeper look, most of those shows are just repurposed programs that have already been on the air. And the real opportunity, I think, ahead is to be able to actually create unique podcasts, whether it's on the network level or on the station level, to be able to represent different viewpoints in your community. And we never had that opportunity before, but we have that opportunity now.
Danielle?
So Zach said something else that I thought was really interesting. And we're talking about going to where people are so we can engage with them on that level, which is exactly why we're doing this listening party, because we're trying to do that as a station. So we have the cacophony that we've been talking about that you need to break through. What do people care most about on social media? Their own content, what they're putting out themselves.
So I think
not
the smart
Black Mirror, right?
Well,
generalizations again, but we care most about the likes that we're getting, what our content, traction that we're what we put out gets. And I think that's another important thing that we can accomplish by doing these experiential events, by engaging people differently, because that encourages people to come and create their own content while they're there and then put that out and share their experiences. So you're engaging them automatically within their own medium and making them the content creators.
I think of what Gary Vaynerchuk said, it should be a 10-to-1 ratio. Yeah. For every one time you ask someone to consume something you created, whether it's a podcast or a story or buy a product, 10 times you should be commenting, engaging with them about something else, or sharing other things that other people did, because otherwise it looks like you're creating a vortex of yourself. But I do take the point, though. I think that's well said. Let's see here. I'm going to grab Whitney in Rochester next up. Is it Whitney? Go ahead.
Hi there. First of all, I am a millennial, positivity or not. And I wanted to say I have been an avid listener. I didn't grow up in Rochester, but I moved here for school and never left. I now work as a pediatric speech pathologist, and I do home visits in the city. And by consuming primarily through your actual radio station is a way that keeps me in touch with what's going on, not only in my community, but in our nation and in our world. And it's exciting for me to be able to participate that way, because I feel that I am making an active choice when I choose to listen to public radio. And I feel like it really does connect me more into the fibers of things that are important to me and my community. I particularly like the Connections program, because I feel like there are things that appeal to me as a listener, as a young person. I mean, just a few weeks ago, you had on the people that own the restaurant, and there's a new winery that they run, and obviously I wasn't listening that closely. But it was exciting to hear that there are opportunities for me, and that was something that I didn't know about. And I just feel that when you stereotype millennials into thinking that maybe all that they do is related to their phone and that information is constantly coming to us, it doesn't make us as active as I think we are. And I'm using, you know, the royal we a lot here too, which isn't particularly fair. But I know for me, I do use social media like Instagram and Twitter and Facebook as a way to find news. But I like to be more proactive in the sense that I am choosing actively to listen to this program, and I am choosing actively to listen to something that's local, which I think is also important to millennials, that whole, you know, go local, drink local, eat local, be local. And I think NPR and, you know, and WXXI provides a medium for us to do that.
All right, Whitney, stay on the line because a couple of things here. It's a good time for me to remind you that if you go to WXXINews.org/connections, you can find the entire Summer of Food series that she's just referred to. We have been having fun with the Summer of Food and trying to introduce different people in different agricultural sectors in our community. But Whitney, I think your comment gives me a chance to ask you one quick follow-up, and then I want to kick to Fred and the panel on the skim and dive notion, because you mentioned that particular day, you know, you were doing other things, but the show was on, and at the very least, you were introduced to something you didn't know was there. So that was a value to you, even if you couldn't dive in depth in content. Are there days, though, where you think, I couldn't stop listening, or I was, you know, really locked in, you know, I spent half an hour, I listened to the whole hour. Are you able to do that on occasion?
Absolutely. I have been known to be 5 or 10 minutes late into one of my sessions.
Yes, that's my goal.
Because what's on the radio is really important to me. And I feel like it is exciting. And there are times that I'll say, man, I really can't miss this meeting or this session, and I have to go. But I'm more likely to look it up later and see if I can find it in alternative mediums, and to be able to go back and double check, because it is inspiring. And the things that I'm able to listen to are, you know, I think someone said, you know, content isn't mind-blowing. I find that a lot of the times it really is. Mm-hmm. And it's providing with, for me, someone who's been out of school, you know, I finished my master's 2 years ago. It's giving me a way to stay up to date and be an academic in ways that are directly related to where I live, which is pretty cool.
Whitney, thank you for what to me, again, is a very validating phone call. I appreciate it. It means a lot to me and to Megan and to Rob and to Prina and everyone who works on this program. But I will also say I want to hear more from Fred Jacobs of Jacobs Media on this notion that, you know, she is willing and happy to dive in and listen for 30 minutes, an hour at a time. Podcasts have succeeded in incredible ways in the last couple of years. And Fred, for anybody who wants to stereotype millennials as only the Twitter generation, no depth, you know, Tiana said she wakes up and she skims. I wake up and I skim. But then sometimes I find something and I seek it out and I want to dive in. And at the very least, I think that is the kind of generalization that's more fair to millennials than lazy, not that intellectual, don't dive in deep. What do you think, Fred?
Yeah, I don't think any of that holds water. But again, we're all going to come at this from different angles. I think that's one of the reasons why the NPR One app is so fascinating. I'm not sure whether your listeners know exactly what the NPR One app is. It's an app that NPR launched about a year ago. The best way I could describe it's sort of like Pandora, but for NPR, where it is sort of a mashup of local content from your local radio station, in this case, you guys, with a bunch of NPR content, whether it is pieces of programs, TED Talks, pieces of podcasts, all those kinds of things, and you can skip stories, you can do all kinds of different things. It just represents a different way of consuming the same content. And again, I think that really is the key. It doesn't matter how you come to the content as long as you find what it is you're looking for and it satisfies you in some way. And I think for people who have just been used to putting it out in that singular way, it's an adjustment to have to modify content in order to match distribution priorities. But ultimately, I think that really is the game. And public radio is ahead of the curve in many respects when it comes to that, but it does take a commitment to make sure that your content is available on the outlets that are most important to your audience, whether they're millennials or boomers.
Zach, are you a skim and diver? I mean, you probably never thought of it in those terms, but do you feel that way?
Yeah. No, I think we all are. And to say that even kind of, anti-intellectual millennials don't dive into things. You know, everybody knows somebody that's spent, 12 hours, banging out a House of Cards season. You know what I mean? So it's not that we don't dive into things and really want to get into things that interest us. Because I don't think it's a content issue. It's a distribution issue. And if you, obviously, your listeners listen to you, right? So basically, if you want to get people that don't already listen to you, you have to go where they are, where they're consuming content, and where they are physically. Like, I think that's, an amazing point here, because it's like, what is the point that we're trying to do right now? Is to get more millennials to listen to the show while it's on air?
Well, to listen to public radio, listen to public radio beyond just Connections or beyond just Finding Tammy Joe or beyond just WXXI News. And become more of a well-rounded public radio listener. And the question is, how does that happen? So I think your point about distribution and finding them is exactly right. I mean, we have to be able to do it. Here's Gabe writing to the program and says, Evan, I'm a millennial who's currently living in South Carolina, moving back to Rochester this weekend. And Gabe says, you're one of the biggest reasons why. I've been listening to the show for a couple of years now, and throughout the years, the conversations have always been inspired by fondness for the 585. I'll be at the listening party next week.
Yeah.
Look forward to seeing you there. Gabe, we will see you there. That is fantastic. Melissa writes and says, Evan, I'm a millennial here listening to your program at work via the WXXI app. I stream daily on most work days as well as listen on my commute on the car radio. Plain and simple public radio is important for millennials because many of us are broke. Like many of my peers, I am very busy and I live on a budget. I cut the cable cord like your caller Nicole due to cost, but I'm always thirsty for even, neutral, intellectual news. With two jobs and graduate school, I don't have time to read full news articles, so being able to listen during my work day is a wonderful solution. Fred, what do you make of that?
Well, Evan, I think there is a common thread to a number of these comments, and going back to Whitney's call about the local piece, I mean, interestingly, we threw out an agree-disagree statement to our sample of more than 29,000 respondents across the country, and the statement is, one of the best things about radio is its local feel. And most people agree with that, but millennials agree with that statement more. 8 of every 10 of them agree or agree strongly. And I think as you're looking at this event that you're putting together and listening to some of these comments, that local context is critically important. Even though a lot of your programming is network-based, that local context, that local piece, those local sensibilities, that really does matter to people, and I think a bit more to the younger end of your audience. So it really sounds like you're on the right track with this experiential local approach that you're looking at here. Plus, radio's cool, you know? I mean, that studio that you're sitting in right now, I mean, I can't see it, but I know what it looks like. I mean, it is a very cool room. All those lights, all those dials, all those monitors, all that stuff, people find that fascinating. And if you can share that experience with your audience, young or old, I mean, that's something that most businesses don't have. So I think that's a true advantage, and it sounds like you're on the right track.
All right, a couple more listener comments that have come in via Twitter, and a lot coming in that way. Let's see here. I have to vet these first, some of them. Iman writes to us and says, I've taken lunch breaks during the show period just to get a chance to listen to a show I really wanted to hear. I listen to the show because it provides substantial insight to the issues that matter to helping understand how our community works. So another vote for sort of issues-based programming.
Are we turning into a little bit of a self-serving talk show right now?
A little bit. That was definitely a risk. I haven't read any of the nasty stuff that thinks the show's awful. But
I just think it would be more telling to find out what people who don't listen to the show, why they don't listen.
That's part of the question is, how do we get more people? But what is it that brought in the first place? That is what I want to understand. And I think, Veronica pushed back a little bit on the politics. How do you cover politics? How do you cover the issues? But it does sound like we're hearing from a number of listeners, at least anecdotally, that approach to the issues in the community did bring them in.
So then all we have to do is just wait for millennials to get older. And then once they start caring about politics, they'll start listening to us.
I
know you were saying distribution matters a lot, but content does a lot as well. I mean, if we think about New York Times and they made all of their, oh my God, Snowfall was amazing, a bunch of really amazing multimedia projects. Mm-hmm. And I think WXXI does a great job at that kind of thing, but that's also something that does a lot to pull people in, those really snappy kind of new things. And it's really hard for smaller groups and media organizations who can't do that big kind of, you know, no, big budget
stuff. Even said yourself, though, like, you said that, like, you don't always listen to the show when it's on, but you'll go and read the news articles.
Exactly.
So it's, you know, you're saying, like, the content is good, but I just don't have time to actually listen to the to the article. I'd rather just kind of read it and get what I can out of it.
All right, so before the hour began, we're down to about our last minute. Veronica and I talked, and, you know, Veronica is one of the savviest public radio people I know, but occasionally you're a tough realist about this. It's hard to generalize. You're not going to get a perfect takeaway. What's one of your takeaways? I mean, what do you leave the hour with here?
One of my takeaways is that we have no idea what we're doing. No, honestly, okay, so just to kind of play off that idea a little bit, my biggest takeaway is that we need to take more risks to reach more people.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to do that because sometimes a lot of our funding comes from older listeners or more traditional listeners who might not be as interested in creating a huge multimedia presentation or doing some sort of like live event that doesn't connect to them. So we need to take risks, but we're also in like this interesting financial situation.
Or taking the time to do a podcast. Finding Tammy Joe could have found no audience and you could have declared it based on numbers a failure. It didn't. It was an incredible success. But the bottom line is we have to be willing to fail. Right?
Right.
To occasionally meet new audiences. Fred, 20 seconds. What do we take away from you, and where would you direct people to learn a little bit more? I know you guys have been doing a lot of research on this.
We have. You can go to our website, jacobsmedia.com, if you want to actually look at some of these studies. Interestingly enough, we're actually going to spend the next few months moving away from the data. We're actually doing millennial ethnographic research, where we're going to select a number of people, probably not unlike some of the people who called your show, and we're going to spend an entire day with them just observing them and the way they consume media throughout their lives. So we're hoping to learn a lot more beyond the numbers.
Tell them no observation bias. Tell them you got to behave normally. Ignore the man in the room.
Just ignore the camera.
Yeah. Fred, thank you so much for the insight. President of Jacobs Media, we appreciate the time today.
It's a good time. Thanks.
Tiana Mignon is the editor-in-chief of Open Mic Rochester. Zach Graham, co-owner of Maker's Gallery. Veronica Volk, Daniel Abramson-Swartz from WXXI. We'll see a lot of you next week.
Yes. Hopefully everybody.
Generation
yes.
Listener.
You're all invited.
There is donuts, too. There will
donuts
be donuts.
And beer.
The donut
donuts
king
and beer.
Will be
there. Craft donuts and beer.
Well, we haven't solved all of the problems, but we've tried. Thanks for listening today. Duprina, Megan, Rob, thanks for the great work on the team, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.